15. Carisian Embassy, City of Sidar, Republic of Sidar. Sir Regis Dragoner tried hard to feel grateful for his posting as he gazed pensively out the window. Usually he didn't find that a particularly difficult task. Of all the embassies to which an ambitious diplomat might find himself assigned, the one in the city of Sidar was probably the plum. Any Carisian was still going to have to put up with the fundamental, almost unconscious arrogance mainlanders displayed to almost anyone from what even the best of them had a tendency to refer to as the out-islands, of course. The Sidarmarkians weren't quite as bad about that as most of their fellows, but they were still quite bad enough to go on with. Yet all minor complaints aside, the Republic was the most comfortable fit any Carisian was going to find among the mainland realms. Sidarmark was firmly addicted to its ancient republican form of government, and its society and social customs were far less rigidly stratified than most of Safehold's more powerful states could boast. That didn't prevent the Republic from sustaining its own great dynasties, in effect, if not in name, an hereditary nobility as powerful as anyone else's, and although there was considerably less prejudice here against those whose wealth came from trade than there was in the other mainland realms, there was still more than there was in Karis. Yet despite all that, Sidarmarkians were more comfortable than most with Karis's sometimes outrageous social notions, and their shared identity as Sidarmarkians included a powerful, self-aware strand of stubborn independence of mind, which they embraced consciously and deliberately as a defining aspect of their national personality. No doubt, Dragoner thought, that independence explained much of the traditional tension between the Republic and the Temple Lands. Despite the nightmares which obviously plagued the Knights of the Temple Lands from time to time, no Sidarmarkian Lord Protector had ever been likely to seriously contemplate launching a war of conquest against them, however tempting a target their wealth might make them. That hadn't kept generations of church chancellors from worrying about the possibility that one day some lunatic Lord Protector would, however. And even worse, in some ways, mostly because it was a considerably more realistic possibility, was the church's fear that the stubbornly intransigent Sidarmarkians might someday refuse to submit to some church decree. If that ever happened, the well-trained, professional, well-equipped pikemen of the Republican army would make a fearsome foe. And unlike Karis, it would be a foe which literally lived right next door to the Temple Lands themselves. That independence of mind was also one of the reasons Sidarmark, traditionally, had maintained close commercial ties with Karis. The Sidarmarkian merchant class was heavily represented in the Republic's elected assembly of the people. In fact, coupled with the wealthy farming class, they dominated the assembly, thanks in no small part to the rigorous property requirements of the franchise. The merchants' interest in supporting friendly relations with Karis was obvious, and despite a certain traditional prejudice against bankers and merchants in general, the farmers' interest was even stronger. No one in Sidarmark was able to supply manufactured goods at anything remotely like the price Carisians could offer, and Karis was Sidarmark's largest single market, by far, for raw cotton, silk, tea, tobacco, and wheat. It was a lucrative trading relationship, which both nations had every reason to preserve. All of which explained why the Carisian ambassador to the Republic had an easier job than most diplomats could ever hope for, under normal circumstances at least. Circumstances, however, were no longer normal, and Sir Regis rather doubted they ever would be again.